Hello and welcome to the Vermillion Sports Show on KRVS 88.7 FM. I am your host, Louis Prejean, sports editor for the Vermillion, the student newspaper of the University of Louisiana. This is the Vermillion Sports Show on KRVS, where we talk the latest in Raging Cajun's athletics as well as NBA trade deadline. Charlie, favorite trade so far? Or we're done now. So, favorite trade of the deadline?
Probably Fultz to the Magic. It's probably been the biggest one. I think that it kind of makes sense for both teams. Like, the Philly kind of moves on from the Fultz experiment. They get a first-round pick, a second-round pick, and, you know, a nice bench player in Jonathan Simmons. And Orlando kind of takes a flyer with a low-risk, high-reward chance with a first overall pick. So
it's kind of heartwarming, too, because it's like Markel Fultz gets a chance.
I hope Fultz does well.
It could be a great redemption story. The Orlando Magic have needed a point guard for a while. Shelvin Mack averaging 3.9 assists per game, leading the team a season ago. I don't think that qualifies as a legit starting point guard. So Markel Fultz this is a great situation for him, I think. You know, and with the young talent around, like an Aaron Gordon to pair alongside. So it's nice.
Mohamed Bamba and Jonathan Isaac. They got a lot of young players on that team. So who knows? Maybe the Magic could finally start to make some noise at some point.
I'm here with sports writer Charles Long. I did not properly introduce you. We had to get right to the deadline, though.
Yeah, I mean, the deadline's definitely the most important part about this show, I think.
More important than us. More important than anything.
More important than the Super Bowl.
More important than the Super Bowl, which I guess we do have to talk about.
Yeah,
just
probably
a little bit.
Just for a bit.
I think the show will go Raging Cajun's basketball, Super Bowl, and we'll just end with big NBA trade talk.
Okay, that works.
That works?
Yeah.
We got to just get maybe the sadness out the way of what's been going on with Raging Cajun's basketball and what happened in the Super Bowl, which some people believe wasn't as boring as you would think.
It was boring.
All right. We're here for the takes.
There's no amount of Trey Wingo yelling that will prove me otherwise.
Also, we do have to mention Tony Romo. Fantastic job.
Him and Jim Nance need to do the Super Bowl every year.
Mm-hmm. We're going to get into all of it. We're going to get into the commercials. We're going to get into the halftime show. Maybe we'll just get into the game and move on.
The whole thing was just kind of
just had a sour note to it.
Even as like a Saints fan, like, it's just, I don't really, you know, taking off my lens of I don't want to watch the Super Bowl, it's still kind of, it wasn't that great, just top to bottom.
Well, objectively, it wasn't the best Super Bowl. It was a boring Super Bowl for most people.
Even the halftime show and the commercials, like, nothing was really that
even
special.
Even for people that were not affected or hurt by the Saints no-call, called it a boring game. So, I mean, it's just, call a spade, as LeBron James would say. We won't talk about that. We will talk about it, because that's NBA trade deadline stuff, and that's where we're going to end on. That's what we're going to talk about. That's the majority of the show, but let's get to it. Raging Cajun's basketball. The women's basketball team now 6-15 after dropping 4 of their last 5 games. Louisiana has not been able to build momentum in their favor in the 2018-19 season. They started 2-2 to begin the season. Alternated wins in the first 4 games. Then they lost 9 of their next 10 games. We thought the start of conference play would kind of signify a resurgence for Louisiana after they won 3 consecutive conference games. However, the Raging Cajuns are coming off a 3-game losing streak and losses in 4 of their last 5 games. The 4 losses, average marginal loss by 20.5 points per game. They're allowing 70.7 points per game to their opponents. For context, they only gave up 60 points a game over the course of 3 21 seasons from 2014 to 2017. They're 5-6 at home, 1-8 away, 8 games left on the year. They play Georgia Southern on Thursday, Georgia State on Saturday. Georgia Southern's 1-8, 6-14 overall. Georgia State 11-9, 5-4 in the conference. But just looking at the women's basketball team, is it their road issues? Is it their defense? Is it their offense? What's just not clicking? What's not working for the women's basketball team?
A lot of things. You know, you can make the argument that the defense is probably the biggest factor. Last year, you know, the Cajuns' offense struggled pretty often. And that was well documented by us. We used to always talk about how the offense would struggle at points, and it caused them a lot of losses. But their defense was always there.
Mm-hmm.
They always, whenever they held teams to under 60, that was the point we used to look for. Whenever they used to hold teams to under 60, they would win. You don't see that from this team. They don't really hold teams under 60 points that often. They struggle on defense, and they don't have the offense that can really back them up from not playing good defense. So, you know, all in all, that kind of proves why they're a 6-15 team.
Mm.
Is their offense hasn't improved from last year, and their defense has gotten worse. And the defense was the only thing that was really keeping them afloat last season. So,
and their offense used to be kind of top heavy, whether it was Kiki Ville, Jalen Gordon, Willridge, or Simone Fields would come in, and they would all average 10 or more points a game. But you're not seeing that with this women's basketball team. Their top three scorers are averaging about 34 points a game,
mm-hmm.
but it used to be 44 points per game, and that's a 10-point difference. And I guess, you know, the women's basketball team would love to make up that 10-point difference they're seeing with their defense with an offensive player that can step up. And you see with Ty Doucette, she's averaging the most points on the team with 13 points a game and 7 rebounds. I mean, she's been amazing, a double-double machine.
Mm-hmm.
But she doesn't really have that help behind her. Brandi Williams is averaging 11 points a game. But Ty Doucette, there'll be points in the season where, this is a good example, in their win over App State, 25 shots, 28 right. points. And that's 28 points that makes up for the lack of a top-heavy score, another top-heavy score. And against Coastal Carolina, where they lost, that was the game after App State, she only took 7 shots in 30 minutes. So it's that Ty Doucette reliance, but she's only a sophomore. And the youth, the injuries for this women's basketball team, all factors into why they only have 6 wins on the season.
Right. I think, you know, Ty Doucette being aggressive is typically a pretty good thing for the Cajuns. You know, you always want your best player to show up and show out and have a big performance. And if typically that produces wins for a good team.
And when you look at kind of the comparison when you're going from the women's to the men's basketball team, which is what we'll talk about now, is Jakeen and Gant's efforts aren't being rewarded in wins as well. Because, I mean, he's been monstrous. He's been doing pretty much everything he can do for
He's been the best player in the conference.
He's been the best player in the conference. Like, but it's not being rewarded because they have now lost their last 3 conference games with their recent loss to Georgia Southern. And the Rage Cajun men's basketball team, they're coming off that North Carolina road trip. That wasn't the most ideal road trip. You would say garbage?
Yeah, I mean, listen, their defense has been abysmal this season. And it's only gotten worse in recent weeks. You know, like before this 3-game stretch against App State, Coastal, and Georgia Southern, they were like in the 336th in the country and giving up like almost 84 points per game. These last couple games have been even worse. You know, against App State, who was a 6-14 team at the time, they gave up 104 points, right? There was their most of the season, still to this point. You know, Georgia Southern got very close. By scoring 103 at the Cajun Dome. And then Coastal, they scored 96 on them. So, you know, in that little 2-game stretch, in this 3-game stretch, they've given up 303 points. It's 101 points per game.
That's not good.
It's abysmal. You're not going to win games like that. And if you want to keep saying you're the class of the conference, you're at the top of the conference, you got to beat the teams in the middle and at the bottom. And they're not doing that.
And I was looking, they hadn't given up a 100-point game to any of their opponents this season until that App State game,
right.
And then you've seen it in 2 of the last 3 games.
And Coastal came close too. Coastal was within 4 points of that 100-point bar. So, you know, it's been really kind of pitiful. Honestly, like the defense is just, you know, it's getting exposed. That they we got to talk about how well these teams are shooting, and that has to have something to do with the backcourt defense. You know, in the Georgia Southern game, I think we were just saying that they shot over 68% from 3.
Yeah.
You know, like they were nailing 3-pointers all night. And, you know, I think Coastal scored 13 3-pointers and App State scored 11.
Right.
So, you know, within the past 3 games alone, teams have hit double-digit 3-pointers all 3 times. So it's obviously a backcourt defense issue. I don't know. It's kind of tough to really pin down. We were talking about the stretch Georgia Southern and Georgia State, and we were thinking that, you know, out of these two games, even though Georgia Southern is kind of a bad matchup for the Cajuns with their guard play, we thought that they would still be an easier game than a team like Georgia State. And then Georgia Southern just comes in the Cajun Dome and drops 103 points. So they're at risk of going 0-2 this weekend and losing their last four, which puts them pretty much out of the conference race.
And if Georgia Southern doesn't miss 9 free throws, it could have been worse. But they shot lights out from 3, 11-16.
Right.
11-16 from 3. And then almost topped App State. It's just the defense. And that's kind of been with Malik Marchetti, he almost like masked all these issues for the Cajuns. And once he went down, and you're seeing it as the season progresses, they're just coming out even more. And that is with like the rotations, only playing about 8 players a game, or whether it be the, and they're getting tired. They're not being able to keep up on defense. And I thought CJ brought up a good point on the podcast, is like, you got to adventure more into zone and adventure more. Get off of man, because you're tying your own players out.
Yeah.
So
you just need to try some things with the defense, because it's just not working. You know, as I said, giving up 303 points over a 3-game stretch in pretty pivotal conference games. You know, at that point in the season, they were 4-3 in the conference. Maybe you can make a move, win those 3 games, and you're 7-3, and now you're looking back at the top of the conference. Now they're 4-6, and now they've just fallen off. And they have a game against Georgia State coming up.
And they have a game against Georgia State.
Exactly. I mean,
last I checked, 16-6, semi conference record, 7-2. It's just, and this is the team that is supposed to be the harder of the two. You lose by double digits to Georgia Southern. It's not looking too great against Georgia State. I mean, we kind of highlighted it on the Vermillion Sports podcast when we were talking about this Georgia trip. And I don't think you were very optimistic going into this.
Well, yeah, I mean, the Georgia trip earlier in the season, they picked up a win against Georgia Southern. It was a very tight win. But it was their, you know, first win of the in conference on the road. Their only conference win on the road, actually. Mm. And so that kind of gave me a little bit of, you know, excitement for the game. In the Cajun Dome, thinking that maybe they could get back on track with a win against Georgia Southern. They lost by double digits to Georgia State on the road, losing by double digits to Georgia Southern, the team they beat earlier in the season at home. You know, that doesn't really give me much excitement for this Georgia State game.
Right. And the point is, it feels like this team's coming apart at the seams. Everything's just kind of falling apart right now. And we'll see what happens. They've lost 3 straight conference games. Hasn't happened since 2016-2017 season. They're staring down a 4th consecutive conference loss. And that happened in 2016-17. So
Georgia State, recently, last night, they lost to UL Monroe.
Okay.
So UL Monroe should have swept them this year. But, you know, they're obviously a tough matchup for Georgia State. So Georgia State coming off a loss is obviously going to want to get back on track.
Right.
So that's just another reason to worry.
Yeah, another reason to worry. So is there anything else you would like to add before we continue with the drool of sports? And
yeah, I mean, listen, the Georgia State game is pretty much become a must-win at this point. If they lose it, they'll still probably be able to make the conference tournament and stuff, but they're not going to have a good seed. You know, they're not going to get a bye.
Be a tough
one. And they don't deserve it at this point. I mean, the defense has just been abysmal all season, especially within recent weeks. So, you know, you're not going to beat a team when you give up over 100 points. So
no. And when you lose a 15-point-a-game scorer and no one really making up for that production, you can't win based on your offense anymore. It's got to come on that defensive end. Okay, so speaking of defense, the Super Bowl, right, Charlie? Defense?
Sure. I kind of credit it more to just abysmal offense, but there were some good defensive plays throughout the game.
Okay. The Patriots won their 6th Super Bowl last Sunday, beating the Los Angeles Rams in an explosive 13-3 game. Did I write that, or did you write that?
I did.
I was like, did I write that? No. Thank you for that contribution. So explosive 13-3 game. People were perceived this game as boring. I've heard people are coming around to the Super Bowl, calling it a defensive masterpiece. And the fact that it was close made it better instead of watching a blowout in the Super Bowl. Thoughts on that?
I can disagree. I think that, you know, the Rams and Wade Phillips, what they pitched was really solid defense. On the other side, I think it's just bad offense. Jared Goff obviously wasn't ready for the spotlight. Sean McVay refused to use Todd Gurley for whatever reason. And what you end up with is, I think, their first eight drives, like, averaged four plays a drive. And they had eight punts to start their game. So, like, when I think of a defensive masterpiece, I think of, you know, a couple standout players that had, like, multi-sacks or, like, a bunch of interceptions or just made these ridiculous plays, touchdowns, defensive touchdowns. There was none of that in this game. It was just, like, Stephon Gilmore had an interception. You know, there were a couple sacks of Goff in the game. Outside of that, it was just boring. It was bad offense more than, I think, great defense.
Who's the Patriots punter? Do we know?
No, I forget his name.
All right, we're going to pull that up. Because for a while, he was, like, the best player on the field.
I think the Rams punter, Hecker, was...
They were both great.
Yeah.
For a while, the punters were the star of the Super Bowl.
I don't know. When a game is 3-0 going into halftime, you know, sometimes you'll think of it as a defensive masterpiece. But I just think that it was kind of a product of Jared Goff not being ready for the spotlight. And, you know, Todd Gurley not getting involved really hurt the Rams offense. The Rams offense all season was built around a stout running game and a passing game that played off the running game. Mm-hmm. I don't know why Sean McVay decided that in the Super Bowl he would decide that throwing first was the way to go with a young quarterback in a big game like that. But Belichick was prepared for, you know, whatever he had in store, and the defense was just phenomenal at points for the Patriots. But at the same time, you know, I can see where people are kind of saying it's a defensive masterpiece because they held a 32 points per game scoring offense to 3 points. I don't know. I was bored.
Just bored. All right, so I just pulled up this article because I Googled the Patriots punter, and I should have known that, by the way. Ryan Allen.
Okay.
So this article says, now that a couple days have passed and another parade is here, it's worth taking a moment to salute an unsung hero of Super Bowl 53, Patriots punter Ryan Allen. No punter in Super Bowl history has made a better case for MVP than Allen, who laser-guided three kicks inside the 10-yard line to doom the Rams' drives before they even began. So, the title, Ryan Allen, New England Patriots punter, deserved MVP consideration. So, I wasn't off when, for a while, the punters were, like, the best players in the game.
No, they were.
It was really amazing, I got to say. Shout out to the punters. Punters are people, too. You know, that's a shirt, Charlie.
I guess so. I think that, you know, the game would have probably been a lot better had both teams really established a running game. I think it would have been a lot more high scoring. I don't know why they kept trying to force the ball down the field. It wasn't there. It wasn't working. You know, Sony Michel had a really nice game. Todd Gurley, you know, had showed a couple flashes. CJ Anderson was, you know, kind of CJ Anderson. He kind of came back down to earth.
Yeah, it's just, I don't know what's up with Todd Gurley. That might be the biggest mystery of, like, everything.
I don't know either because in the divisional round against the Cowboys, he had about 150 yards rushing. You know, he had a huge game, and then he was barely used against the Saints in the championship round, and he got 10 carries in the Super Bowl. And that's your MVP candidate, getting 10 carries in the Super Bowl. I don't understand it.
I don't know if he was hurt, but if he wasn't hurt, and the Rams decide to go with C.J. Anderson, that's just bad management.
Well, if he was hurt, why did he get almost 150 yards against the Cowboys?
He might have gotten hurt in that game. Conference.
Maybe.
One of the games leading up into the Super Bowl. It's just a mystery because, like, no one's even reporting on it.
Yeah.
That's what's – usually a sideline reporter at one of the games would go and see what's wrong with Todd Gurley and report on it, but we just got shots of him – on the bike, on the sideline, and that's it. And then he would come in for, like, a run every 20 plays. Like, Just a mystery, honestly.
I would not be surprised to see him getting like some kind of off-season surgery relatively soon. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, but they didn't want to report it, which against the rules, but, you know, whatever. All right, so let's move on to the commercials. Not impressed by the commercials, Charlie.
Nah.
No? Not really. Even the NFL 100, where everyone was hyping it up, calling it the best commercial ever. You didn't like it?
It's okay. I mean, like, I don't know. It showed, like, a bunch of, you know, old players and new players. I thought that was kind of cool. They were just kind of running around a room. You know, it was, I don't know. I thought it was kind of overhyped.
You've given up. You gave up on the season when the Saints lost.
Well, here's the thing. Like,
nothing would have pleased you.
What made it as great as people are saying it's the greatest Super Bowl commercial ever? I don't think so.
What is the greatest Super Bowl commercial ever?
I can't think of off the top of my head.
I don't know. One of the old Doritos commercials? Yeah. One of those?
Wasn't the Mean Joe Green commercial a Super Bowl commercial with the Coke?
I'm not sure.
If it is, that's my favorite.
All right, there we go. We're pulling that one out. So, not even a fan of the NFL 100 commercial.
It was fine. Wow. I'm not going to overhype it like some people did. I thought it was fine. Yeah.
Nothing else? No movie trailers popped up that you're interested in? We got an Avengers Endgame teaser.
All right.
Toy Story 4 trailer.
That was good. Okay. That was one of the highlights.
Yeah. All right. I'm just saying.
The Toy Story 4 one was cool.
But let me just say, there's no need to make a Toy Story 4. What else do we get? I don't know if any other movie
got a
trailers.
Bunch of car commercials and a bunch of beer commercials. The Bud Light commercials are pretty funny.
Yeah,
like their whole digging on I think it was Coors and whoever else uses corn syrup in their beer. I thought that was really funny.
Okay, so I have to Google what popped up during the Super Bowl. So the new Us movie. They had a trailer.
I don't remember that.
Yeah. Well, I kind of like didn't even watch
it. Oh, they
had
a trailer for The Twilight Zone, which was interesting.
There we go. That's one of my highlights. Yeah, like, yeah. Seeing Jordan Peele, like, it was an announcement.
I don't know.
Would
look.
I was The Twilight Zone.
I'm a big fan of the original Twilight Zone series. I think it's perfect television. I think it's the golden standard for an anthology series. I don't know why they're remaking it. Look, I trust Jordan Peele.
Absolutely.
I think that he can do great things, but why touch something that's perfect? You know what I mean? Like, it just kind of feels like it's a money grab. And you know, putting Jordan Peele on there after the success that he's having now as a movie director, it's, if anyone was making it, if anyone else was making it, I'd be kind of hesitant. Jordan Peele has me a little less hesitant, but still at the same time, like, I don't really see it as a necessity for a remake right now. I don't know. But, you know, I do like Jordan Peele, as I've been saying.
I'm glad. I was about to say, I would trust Jordan Peele with my life. So, all right, well, there we go for the commercials. There you have it from Charlie's.
Very meh.
Yeah, okay. And then the halftime.
There were some good commercials.
The halftime show.
Oh, God.
We should skip over this, right?
How upset were you that they didn't play Sweet Victory?
A little bit, just because I heard the rumbles, I heard the rumors that SpongeBob's going to make an appearance, like the Sweet Victory scene is going to make an appearance at the Super Bowl, and, you know, kind of got excited because, I mean, that was one of the great moments of SpongeBob.
When I saw the cartoon, I got really excited, and then went to Travis Scott, and I was just like, oh no, what are you doing?
Yeah, well... Ew. I don't like Adam Levine. This might be a hot take. This is where people turn off the show. I don't like Adam Levine. Don't like Maroon 5.
I can't name a single Maroon 5 song.
There you go. But yeah, and it was a majority of that. So, and then he took off his shirt in front of just a bunch of young girls, and I'm not there for that.
Yeah, and then you have Travis Scott and Big Boy. Big Boy tried to save it.
He tried his hardest, man. He came in the car. He had a big fur coat on. He tried his best.
I would have loved to just have Outkast just do it.
Well, that, I mean.
But I don't think Andre 3000 performs anymore, so.
He retired, I know that, but.
So, that's disappointing. I think that would have been a far superior show to Maroon 5.
What I think is interesting is how no one likes a halftime show.
What was the last one?
Any of the halftime shows.
Was this the worst one?
Everyone has a problem with it.
Was this the worst one?
I don't know. I don't know what the worst.
I think the Black Eyed Peas. Black Eyed Peas one was really bad.
Anytime Fergie is singing on a national stage, it's just not good.
I don't know.
Okay, no, wait. We'll pull
Bruno
up the
Mars.
Article.
Bruno Mars did a good job when he did it.
Yeah, him and Beyonce
did, was good.
Him
yeah,
and Beyonce did good. No, see, what we're doing is throwing the whole outline away. See, we have Vulture.com, every Super Bowl halftime show since 1993 ranked.
Okay.
From worst to best. Okay, so we don't have to get to the best. We just have to talk about the worst because that's what we do, right? This could be recency bias.
Look at like the top three, maybe.
So they have at 26 Phil Collins, Christina Aguilera, Enrique Iglesias, and Toni Braxton. What a cast.
Yeah.
I don't know how that happened. I'm trying to get to some notable. They have a 24, so this is technically their third worst ranked halftime show is Maroon 5, Travis Scott, and Big Boi.
It's pretty bad.
It's just because those names don't fit. Like,
yeah.
It all doesn't fit. And then in 2006, they have the Rolling Stones. I'm trying to see if you remember any of these.
I don't remember that.
Which ones would you remember? I'm trying to see.
Probably from, like, you know, 2010 on.
Oh, you ready? 2018. This is a bad one. Justin Timberlake.
I don't even remember his performance. I totally forgot he was in the halftime show.
It's just because he dropped the album Man in the Woods, and it wasn't a very good album. 2010, The Who.
Okay.
I'm getting the ones that we kind of know. So in 2008, Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers performed. Apparently, these are all middle of the pack at this point.
Okay.
Bruno Mars and the Red Hot Chili Peppers in 2014.
I thought that was a good show.
I thought it was too.
Hmm.
I thought it was too.
Let's probably be my upper echelon.
You know what? Let's be a little more positive. All right. Oh, wait. We have the Black Eyed Peas performance at 11.
Okay, that's hot. That's a hot take.
Yeah,
that should be at the bottom.
It's kind of up there. That's Black Eyed Peas, Usher, and Slash.
Ugh.
Don't
remind me.
Here we go. 2017, Lady Gaga. I'm just testing the waters here with you.
Okay.
All right. Well, this is pretty much the top 10 of performances. Number 8, Coldplay, Beyonce, Bruno Mars.
That was a good one.
Yeah, we like that one, though. Janet Jackson, Justin Timberlake, Jessica Simpson, Kid Rock, Nelly, and P. Diddy. Whoa. They were swinging for the fences.
No joke. Huh?
How many audiences could we reach with that performance?
How wide can we cast this net?
Yeah. Okay, so you remember the Sharks with Katy Perry?
Yeah.
This is number 5. Katy Perry, Lenny Kravitz, and Missy Elliott. Well, I mean, just when you have Left Shark, the meme of Left Shark happening, it's great. We still don't. Was Left Shark drunk?
Probably. He had a couple too many Super Bowl beers.
A couple Bud Lights, trademarked. Right? Beyonce,
no corn syrup.
Beyonce and Destiny's Child at 3. So this is like the top 3 here.
Okay.
Oh, shout out to LMFAO for making an appearance on.
Didn't Prince do a halftime show?
I think so. He might be number one. I don't know.
Yeah,
this
Prince,
is number,
Prince had a good
number
one.
2, Madonna, LMFAO, Nicki Minaj, and CeeLo Green. And number 1, Prince.
Yeah, called it.
In 2007. So there you go. That's Vultures.
Understandable. All right. I have a couple issues with that list because Black Eyed Peas' performance was awful.
Let's
and
get
should
to the
be
list.
At the bottom. But, you know, outside of that, you know, I think Prince was probably the best, but
I'm off the Lady Gaga thing, you know?
Yeah, kind of.
Well, that one bored me more than anything, so I wasn't a big fan. And they had her about 8 to 10 range, so. Anyway, Prince.
Lady Gaga, Oscar nominated.
And Lady Gaga, Oscar nominated. We're going to have to do the Oscar show soon. We're off the rails at this point. Hey, we're off the rails at this point, so we could just talk about Oscar. We could talk about we'll bring it back to sports. But this is these halftime shows. Hard to not give it to Prince.
Yeah.
So and everyone likes Prince, and then there you go, Prince at number 1, Vulture's list. We won't look at any other list because we have NBA trades to talk about.
Yes, we do.
Okay, so before we should we talk about the actual trades first? Should we talk about Pels and AD? And Lakers first? Where do you want to start?
Whichever order. I think we could probably talk about the actual trades and then move on to like future hypotheticals and stuff.
Yeah, there we go. All right, let's talk about the actual trade. So your favorite trade was Markelle Fultz.
Yeah, Markelle Fultz to the Magic, Orlando Magic for Jonathan Simmons, the OKC first-round pick, and a second-round pick. You know, pretty fascinating trade. I think it works a little bit for both sides because, you know, the 76ers get a good bench player with Jonathan Simmons. They get a couple of picks, you know, that maybe they can draft a couple players and start to maybe develop a little bit more bench and have a couple young contracts or, like, cheap contracts on their team, especially because they needed to pay Tobias Harris and Jimmy Butler when once their contracts expire.
Yeah, what works with that, too, is they're trying to win now.
Yeah.
But and with, like, Tobias Harris, with Jimmy Butler, Joel Embiid, Ben Simmons. So Jonathan Simmons gives you that wing depth, as you mentioned. But it is a kind of more of a win now move because Markel Fultz is more of a future piece.
Right.
But as you mentioned, with the first round pick that you might be getting, it is protected. So, and with the second round, those are cheap contracts. And if you draft well, could be assets.
Right. And you look at, you know, the team that they have right now, I think the move that they made the other night to get Tobias Harris was probably one of those win now moves. Mm-hmm. You know, I think they have probably one of the most talented rosters in the Eastern Conference now, especially starting five. Every one of their starting five, every member of that starting five lineup scores over 17 points per game. So you're obviously going to get a lot of production from your starters. You don't need that much from the bench when you're in a situation like that. But Tobias Harris is a very underrated player. I think he should have been an all-star this year. You know, they're saying that Jimmy Butler was probably the biggest East snub. I think Tobias Harris is probably the biggest West snub. Mm. So, you know, this is a team that almost has four all-stars on it. It's a pretty scary team, especially in the Eastern Conference. Now, my question is, does this put them over the top? Does this put them into the West, NBA Finals?
Probably not. And I'll say that because I think you have more established teams with better coaches.
Okay.
So I think Toronto, even though Nick Nurse, he has been with Toronto for a while as an assistant. I think Mike Budenholzer.
Coach Budenholzer, I think, is Coach of the Year with the Bucks.
Yeah. And I even think Brad Stevens with the Celtics. I think they're better coached and Celtics are kind of shaky, but just adding Jimmy Butler and Tobias Harris mid-season and trading a lot of your bench guys that were with you to start is kind of hard to adjust to in February and expecting to make it to the NBA Finals in June. So you don't get a lot of practice time in the season. You don't get a lot of time to gel. You have to do it sort of in-game. You have to make on-the-fly adjustments. And with, as you mentioned, four all-star caliber players, that's hard to do.
Yeah, I think that, you know, it's probably going to come down to coaching with what Brett Brown decides to do. I think that, you know, the different rotations that they can use with these pieces now, it really kind of depends on how healthy Joel Embiid is by the time the playoffs come around. Because if he's 100% and he can play a good amount of minutes, he can play with different rotations of players like a Ben Simmons and a Tobias Harris or throw Jimmy Butler in a couple of different rotations with these bench players, and they'll still have two All-Stars on the floor. So I think that, you know, this is a pretty good move for them, but it's also a good move for the Magic because they get, as you know, their GM said, a low-risk, high-reward type of player with Markel Fultz, former number one overall pick. It takes him out of the pressure of Philadelphia and moves him into a rebuilding team in the Magic. And the Magic, you know, they have a lot of young players on their team. You know, Aaron Gordon, Jonathan Isaac, you know, Mohamed Bamba. They've kind of struggled with guard play. You know, Shelvin Mack, who led their team in assists last season with 3.9. That's obviously not what you want to see as like an assist leader on your team. So now you get a young guard, number one overall pick. If he can get his shot right, he is a pretty solid player.
Look, it's crazy how much has happened with Markel Fultz, but let's not forget he's like 1 year removed from being the number one overall pick, or
right,
about 2 years removed from being like, he's still a great player, and that time gap isn't much for him to just forget how to play basketball. I mean, he was great in college. So I'm trying to think, you know, that was a point I was going to make with the Sixers is the different lineups they can present now, giving one player a rest an extended rest like a Joel Embiid, because now you got Jimmy Butler, Tobias Harris, and Ben Simmons that could kind of carry that offense. Right. We don't know about the defense because they're none of them are big men. Yeah. But just any combination of those players is really interesting, because I think Tobias Harris is a better fit if you want to have him more off the ball than Jimmy Butler, because Jimmy Butler is more of a ball handler and he needs the ball in his hands. But just having like Jimmy Butler and Tobias Harris on the floor and Ben Simmons, Joel Embiid off is still interesting in that way, because Tobias Harris can play off of anyone.
Harris is incredibly underrated.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, you know, the night that he got traded, he hit a game winner and dropped 34 points for the Clippers. He was one of the big reasons that they were in the playoff hunt. And, you know, losing him, I think the Clippers are ready to kind of call it.
Yeah, they're punting.
Yeah, they're punting the season. You know, they're giving up their playoff positioning. I don't fully understand why. I guess they don't think that they can do enough with the roster they have now. So they're going to just kind of try and build in the offseason. Tobias Harris, I think, was the best piece on that team. And, you know, sending him to the Sixers, I think that the Sixers are probably one of those teams that people will look back on, you know, late in the season going into the playoffs and say, okay, the Sixers were the winner of the trade deadline.
Mm-hmm.
The Mavericks also are contenders, I think, for winners of the trade deadline. They got rid of, you know, two bad contracts. They gave up a young player for it, but they got Kristaps Porzingis back.
Who's still young, by the way.
Exactly.
And I was trying to see with the 76ers. I forgot what point I was going to make about that. But anyway, the 76ers, I mean, still having four All-Stars. Oh, okay, with Tobias Harris. He's a free agent this summer.
Yep.
So I think the Clippers didn't want to pay him because they're looking at a Kawhi and maybe an Anthony Davis push.
You mean the Clippers?
Yeah, the Clippers. What did I say?
You said the Sixers.
My bad. Yeah, I meant the Clippers. Yeah, they could be looking at Kawhi and an Anthony Davis push.
And you know, if Anthony Davis was to get traded today, I would hope that it would be to the Clippers. He obviously didn't. You know, they're still kind of apparently waiting out to see, you know, what kind of trade package they want to make. Anthony Davis put out four teams, I believe, that he would re-sign with. He said the Bucks, which is really aggravating. The Clippers, the Lakers, and the Knicks. Mm. Only one of those teams is in win-now mode. The Lakers maybe are on the verge, if they get Anthony Davis, of being in win-now mode.
One of those teams is in win-now mode and actually winning, I think.
Yeah.
Milwaukee.
Exactly.
Like, I think the Clippers, Lakers, and Knicks want to win now. They don't. They're not. They're not winning now. And the Clippers are kind of doing a good job of it. So if he were to go anywhere in the Lakers, Knicks, and Clippers, I think maybe kind of the best place for him if he wants to win is the Clippers. Because Jerry West is doing a lot of great things over there.
I'd say the Clippers or the Bucks. I think that if he went to the Bucks, him and Giannis Antetokounmpo would be ridiculous. You know, that's two young superstars paired together. And you know, if they play their career out, that's, you know, they might win some things. But, you know, you look at the Clippers, as you were saying, Jerry West is starting to get his plans hatching, you know. He has big aspirations with the Los Angeles Clippers. And you know, people have already talked. Kawhi, when he said that he wanted to go to Los Angeles, he may not be going to the Lakers in free agency. The Clippers are probably one of his top spots because he doesn't want to play with LeBron. I mean, he obviously wants to be one of the best player on his team. But if he can pair up with a superstar like Anthony Davis, the Clippers might be a very dangerous team.
I was trying to think, didn't the Clippers trade for Zubac today?
Yes.
What if they know the Pelicans do want Zubac as a piece?
That could be interesting.
And they traded for Zubac to pair in a package with Zubac, Montrezl Harrell, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander.
And a boatload of picks.
That Heat 21 pick, their pick, and you
the
send
Sixers pick.
You send all that out. And now we're talking about a package that the Pelicans like.
Yeah.
So that Zubac trade could have a little bit more to it than we're kind of seeing right now.
It makes sense. I think that, you know, Zubac is a solid young big man. And if he, you know, even if he doesn't develop 100%, he's still a solid bench player, you know, and the Pelicans might still like him. I think the Pelicans probably would love to get Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, who's a young point guard who would be, you know, perfect pair next to Drew Holiday. And that's a good defensive backcourt.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a rookie. He's averaging about 10 a game, right? He's a solid young player. I think he has a really high upside.
And what's great about him, he makes winning plays. I mean, the stats don't jump off right now, but he's one of those. He's better than Marcus Smart, but he's Marcus Smart in I'm making smart, like, winning plays. I'm really putting a lot of effort into the way I play.
His stats don't jump off the page, but not many, you know,
rookie
mm-hmm. point guard stats do jump off the page. You know, De'Aaron Fox didn't really jump off the page for his first year.
Lonzo
Ball didn't jump off the page his first year. Colin Sexton, as you said. So I think that there's a lot of upside to this player, and I think he'd be the centerpiece of a package. And you'd pair him along with Zubac if the Pelicans like Zubac, and maybe like Harrell, who's a contract that can maybe make the money work, and then this boatload of first-round picks, which they can offer probably four or five first-round picks for Anthony Davis. Yeah, look, they got three for Tobias Harris, I believe. They got two for Harris. I think they got the Heat pick and the Sixers pick.
Yeah, they got
so two. They got two for Harris. It's not that out like that ridiculous or outrageous to think that a player like Anthony Davis could fetch four or five, especially with the teams that you're talking about, where these first round picks are probably relatively late.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and as I said, Jerry West is a smart guy. He's been running that team very, very well. So just the fact that he might have saw an opportunity where the Lakers thought they were out of the AD race. And they were like, we might as well just trade Zubac because the Pels don't want to deal with us anymore. And the Clippers took advantage of the Lakers being down and out of the AD talks and seeing that opportunity where, oh, we could get Zubac and we'll have stuff to offer the Lakers, to offer the Pelicans with now that we have Zubac. That it's a smart move.
The Heat, who are a fringe playoff team right now, their 2021 pick might be very valuable, especially unprotected.
Yes.
That pick can be at least in the lottery, maybe top 10, possibly top 5 in a couple of years when the Heat have moved on from Dwayne Wade. That's an end of an era type of deal. And, you know, maybe they get rid of Hassan Whiteside. Maybe they start to tank and they get rid of these players and then their pick gets more and more valuable. So I think that, you know, that could maybe be a little bit more incentive to maybe do a deal with the Clippers. I am very happy that the Pelicans did not give in
mm-hmm.
To... you know, the media and all the fans and even some of the players and Clutch Sports.
Clutch was the biggest
were
thing.
All pushing to get Anthony Davis to the Lakers, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm so glad that the Pelicans didn't give in because that package is probably the worst of the packages that they'll consider over the summer. And, you know, people say, oh, they got offered five players and, you know, they got offered two first-round picks and whatever. That team, with LeBron James, lost by 42 points to an Indiana Pacers team without Victor Oladipo. With those players. I don't understand why anyone thinks that a Brandon Ingram, a Kyle Kuzma, a Lonzo Ball, who doesn't want to be here in the first place, he already made it clear that if he got traded to New Orleans, he wanted to go to Phoenix if he wasn't going to be in the Lakers. And, you know, maybe Zubac. I don't understand why people think that this group of young players with only a couple of really high upside are going to change this Pelicans team. What the Pelicans are looking for is a player that will be an all-NBA type of player. They're giving up an all-NBA player in Anthony Davis. They're expecting to get something like that back.
And that's the problem with maybe dealing with the Clippers. You're not getting an all-NBA guy.
You're not getting an all-NBA guy, but some of these other packages, like we were saying, you know, with the Clippers package, where they give you a boatload of picks, you at least have your shots to draft well and maybe get a couple all-star players out of that draft or out of these future drafts. With a trade like with the Knicks, right, you get these two young players like Dennis Smith Jr. and Kevin Knox who both have all-star potential, right? And then you get the first round pick, their first overall pick. Maybe it's probably 1-3. It's probably a top three pick, right? That's maybe a player that turns into an NBA type of player, right? It's just, I think that the Lakers offer, while they were giving up a lot of players and giving up a couple picks, none of those players were going to really push the Pelicans over the edge and say, this is a trade that I need to take. This isn't a trade I can't pass up. and just accept it on the spot.
With you mentioned this a week or so ago when we were talking about, maybe a week ago, with Lonzo Ball, Brandon Ingram, and Kyle Kuzma, the main trade pieces for the Lakers, they weren't not going to want to stay with New Orleans. Now, if you deal with a Milwaukee, if you deal with a Clippers or a Knicks, I believe they have guys that will want to stay around with an organization. Because you look at Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Montrezl Harrell, Zubac, they kind of want to stay. But Lonzo Ball, Ingram, Kuzma, I don't think they would want to stay with New Orleans. And I think New Orleans might be, I don't know if they are, but they do have to look at that aspect of, okay, we need players that are going to want to be here as well.
Exactly.
So,
and I think that, I think Dell Demps, his eyes are set on Jason Tatum. Jason Tatum, solid player with extremely high potential. And he said in an interview that he would trade himself for Anthony Davis.
Because it's a credit to you as a player if you're getting traded for Anthony Davis.
That's what good players say, is that they think that, you know, they take that in stride and say, okay, this organization traded this outstanding player for me. I got to prove them right.
Right.
Right. You get players like that, which are the type of players that you want on your team, right? And then you get players like DeJounte Murray, who, when he saw a package, on NBA ESPN, he's just like, I don't want to be anywhere near this trade. Get my name out of this package.
Yeah,
I mean, you have no say in the matter. You're irrelevant. You're DeJounte Murray.
DeJounte Murray and Lonzo Ball, both, you know, you don't pick. It's still a business at the end of the day. And the business is harsh. You look at Harrison Barnes that got traded during the game, granted, but according to Paul Pierce, he did know.
Right.
Like, it was a possibility of getting traded.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, at the end of the day, it is a business, and it's hard to kind of distinguish business and just the player side of it, because these are lives like that, you know, people are getting traded. So that's a tough thing to balance. So we threw the outline away because I said we were going to look at the deadline predictions for the Pels before Thursday. We get a Mirotić trade to the Bucks, and that makes the Bucks better because they get, I mean, who'd they give up? Stanley Johnson and
Jason Smith.
And Jason Smith. Well, welcome home, Jason Smith. This is the Vermillion Sports Show on KRBS. Glad you're listening. So, along with Drew Holiday and everyone else. So, Mirotić gets traded to the Bucks, and it's for, well, yeah, Jason Smith, Stanley Johnson, and 4 second-round picks. I guess the Pelicans just want every pick in existence.
What a very peculiar trade, huh?
It is, because I would give them all of that back. Just give us a first.
Right.
And I'm okay.
Give us 2 firsts. No.
No,
okay.
I would take 1 first.
Look, the Bucks first.
That's what we gave up for Mirotić.
The Bucks first is basically a second at this point. It's like, it's late 20s, right? I think getting a first would have been great. But this included in the seconds was the Cavaliers second round pick, which is basically almost a first round pick.
Yeah.
Basically. So, you know, I think we got a decent haul. I don't like to see Nikola go. He had to probably go, right? With the way the team is rebuilding. You know, I wish him all the best. You know, I'll be rooting for the Bucks now because of Nikola Mirotić.
He's a great fit on that team.
He really is. He makes them a very scary team. If they weren't scary already, you know, they got a lot of great pieces on that team, and now mm-hmm. they just had another one.
And they didn't give up any of their pieces.
They basically flipped Thon Maker in a bunch of seconds for Nikola Mirotić at the end of the day. So, you know, I think that the Pelicans got a bunch of picks back that maybe they could strike on. You know, you have four second-round picks. You might be able to strike gold on one of them.
It's a lot of darts that you can throw at the board. Also, maybe some things that you could just throw in trades.
Maybe you can package some seconds together and maybe get in the first round.
Yeah, you never know. On trade night, Etuan Moore didn't get traded. Julius Randle didn't get traded. That's also interesting.
I think Julius Randle didn't get traded. I think I was reading that Julius Randle wants to stay in New Orleans. You know, there's you love what, hearing what that, don't you? You love hearing that. But Julius Randle, I think there's a mutual, you know, respect with him and the organization. I think he wants to stay here because, you know, we took a chance on him, and he's playing really well. You know, former 7th overall pick by the Lakers. I'm glad he's enjoying himself here. I appreciate Julius Randle. You know, not every superstar wants to leave New Orleans. I appreciate it. It is Julius Randle and Drew Holiday Appreciation Day.
Appreciation Day for them on this NBA trade deadline edition. I will say it's funny how the Lakers gave up D'Angelo Russell and Julius Randle, and those are their top young talent that they drafted. It's
honestly
amazing. I mean, just look at the way D'Angelo Russell is playing. Look at the way Julius Randle's playing.
Julius Randle's a 2010 guy.
Yeah.
Like every night, he's a double-double machine. And, you know, the player that's probably closest to that right now is maybe Kuzma. I think he's averaging like 16 and like 7.
But you would give up Lonzo, Ingram, and Kuzma to just get D'Angelo Russell and Julius Randle back on your team.
Without a doubt. You do that immediately.
Think about that. If they're a better fit with LeBron, first off.
If they still had D'Angelo Russell, and D'Angelo Russell was included in that trade package instead of Lonzo Ball, I would have taken it.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But you have Lonzo Ball, who's a very mediocre player, who's acting like he's good enough to decide where he wants to play. It's kind of ridiculous.
It's just Lonzo Ball's not an impact player. And if you threw D'Angelo Russell along with those other players, that's at least an impact player you'd be getting back that you could pair with Drew Holiday and the other players. I think it would just fit a lot more. Okay, so do you have any other thoughts on that?
If we would have done a three-team trade and included the Suns in it and maybe gotten their first-round pick this year unprotected and, you know, Lonzo makes his way to Phoenix because Phoenix obviously really wants Lonzo Ball because he fits their system, I guess. If we get their first round pick in the package, I would have probably taken it.
Yeah, but if you're the Suns, you don't do it because you just gave up your first round pick for Lonzo.
Yeah, I know.
And
but
probably
it,
something
it,
else.
It really,
but
yeah, I mean, you probably get compensated with one of the young players from, you know, another young player instead of just Lonzo Ball. But, you know, in that package, if the Pelicans received Kuzma, you know, Josh Hart, the Suns' first round pick, you know, the Lakers, two Lakers first round picks and Zubac, I'd take it.
That's interesting.
But I guess it never really worked out. I think that in that package, you probably have to send Ingram and Lonzo to the Suns, and you send AD to the Lakers, AD and Solomon Hill to the Lakers.
Solomon Hill has to be in the trade.
It's the trade machine, you know.
Sorry,
we plug stuff in and see if it works.
Yeah.
But see, that's an enticing trade. You know, maybe you get another first rounder from the Suns in a couple years, like a couple years, like 2023 or something like that, with a protection, like a top five protection, and you rock with that, you know. But I think that would have made it a lot more enticing than just what the Lakers were offering, in my opinion.
Yeah, the Anthony Davis stuff is really interesting because now you get the summer trades. That's where he will be traded in July.
There's not a chance that he you know,
he begins the season with the Pelicans.
I don't think he should play another minute with the Pelicans.
No,
he keeps saying that he wants to play the rest of the season. And the reason he wants to play the rest of the season, keep in mind, is so that he can get that All-NBA mention and get that contract bonus and stuff. You're not on the team, Davis. He already said he wants out. At that point, why ruin the chemistry that these young guys are starting to develop together?
Fun to watch.
Really fun to watch. Jahlil Okafor is a blast to watch. Him, Frank Jackson, you know, Drew Holiday, they're all playing their hearts out. They're playing great every single night. This is the perfect tank for the Pelicans because not only are you watching inspired basketball, but they're still losing some games.
That's right.
You're still losing some games and improving your draft position. So it's still watchable basketball. The team is playing well, but their draft position's also going up. And this is the perfect tank, in my opinion. And
job,
I don't want Anthony Davis to come in and ruin the atmosphere that they got going on. You know, ruin the chemistry.
And if he
he's already kind of done that.
And if he gets hurt, lose the trade value.
He said some garbage about like how he loves the players and stuff, and it's not about them. It's just like you don't think you can win with them. Like,
you lost the team, I believe.
Yeah.
The minute you said, and we've always had a problem with this comment, I have to play perfect for us to have a chance to win.
He had one foot out the door as soon as he signed with Clutch Sports and Rich Paul.
Hey, I saw that interview with Rachel Nichols, and I knew it was over.
Yeah.
So, all right, I was looking at the other moves. I guess I was doing some predicting. I said Grizzlies with Mike Conley and Marc Gasol on this outline, and Marc Gasol got traded to Toronto.
Mike Conley is staying in Memphis, but Marc Gasol is now on the Raptors. Pretty interesting move.
I said, do the Bucks mess with what they have going? And they didn't mess with what they have going. They just added to what they have.
They changed it, but they added. Yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy what the Bucks did. So I was looking at buyout options. We can end the show kind of like on the fun buyout options. I thought DeAndre Jordan would be a buyout option.
Mm-hmm.
Turns out him and Kevin Durant are really good friends.
Okay.
So he could be an attraction for the Knicks to bring Kevin Durant on over.
And that's another reason we were talking about, maybe if Anthony Davis goes to the Knicks, you know, get a package of all their young players together, like Dennis Smith Jr., who they got from the Mavs, Kevin Knox, who they've had now, and maybe package two first-rounders, including their one this year, which is going to be a top-three pick. Send that over to the Pelicans, I'd take it.
Mm-hmm. So, kind of like an interesting move from the Knicks of, hey, DeAndre Jordan. We'll trade for him because yeah. Kevin Durant likes DeAndre Jordan, and they're really good friends. I put Wesley Matthews on here as another one, and he is being bought out and is expected to sign with the Pacers. Hey, the Pacers were struggling a little bit without Oladipo, but they kind of got it together a little bit.
They're a good team. They're really well coached.
Yeah. So I like the Pacers. Do you remember when we kind of had that discussion of like sleeper teams, and I said the Pacers?
Yeah.
The next day, Oladipo got hurt. And then I said the Nets, and the next day, I think, who got hurt?
Caris LeVert.
No, Dinwiddie got hurt the day after that.
Spencer Dinwiddie.
Yeah. So I was like, the two teams I mentioned just lost key pieces.
The kiss of death.
I said Jeremy Lin. I mean, but there's no real talks on that front. Because I still believe in Jeremy Lin. I watched yesterday, I ate breakfast, and while I was eating, I watched Lin Sanity highlights. It's so
fun. It's always
fun
to revisit.
Hey, man, that's such a good time.
Yeah.
Because I remember when Steve Novak would hit a three, and me and my friend would scream at the TV, Novaking. Like, we made it a thing. Like, Novaking is just where you, like, come off the bench and hit three straight threes or something like
that.
That's
funny.
So, Steve Novak was fantastic. And Jeremy Lin was great. And speaking of Jeremy Lin and the Knicks and Lin Sanity, Carmelo as a buyout option.
Yeah. Who knows what Carmelo's going to do? Apparently,
the Lakers freed up a spot.
Yeah, the Lakers apparently have some kind of interest in them, I've heard. But who knows?
Yeah. So, all right. We're about to wrap up the show. Where does Anthony Davis go in the summer? We'll be talking about it each week, but right now, post-NBA trade deadline prediction, where does he go, Anthony Davis?
I'm going to say the Clippers. I think the Clippers is where he ends up.
We've talked ourselves into it.
I don't think he ends up in Boston because, you know, Ainge has said that no player is off the table. Ainge just played it smart because he hasn't mentioned any players' names or anything like that. But AD doesn't want to re-sign there. I don't think he's going to include Tatum. So I'm gonna go with the Clippers for now. But I don't know.
Subject to change, of course.
It's like one of like four teams. It's going to be a lot of fun.
It is a lot of fun. It could still be the Lakers. Yeah, who knows?
Could still be the Knicks, depending on the draft lottery.
Could still be the Knicks. All right, that will do it for myself and Charlie this week. Thank you, Charlie. It was a great show.
Yeah.
A lot of things to talk about.
We love the trade deadline.
Yeah, the trade deadline is great. Shout out to Markelle Fultz. Sincerely, shout out to Markelle Fultz.
Good luck.
I mean, that's great. So,
long listener. Good luck.
Markelle Fultz, we know you're listening. All right, if you missed any part of the show, you can listen to it online at krvs.org. You can hear us talk sports every Thursday at midnight. Programming on KRVS comes to you each week through the generous support of listeners like you and the University of Louisiana.